Good morning, everybody. This is Bob Elson, and we're set as usual for our Sunday morning show, and this one is coming from our new location in the Loop at 72 East Randolph. It's a beautiful, beautiful site here, and I'm sure when you're doing business downtown, you'll enjoy coming in to this new location of Northwest Federal. Well, baseball has been in the news this week. As you know, there have been a lot of transactions, a lot of deals made. The last one, if it is approved by the commissioner, will send Vida Blue to the Cincinnati Reds, and that would really strengthen that pitching staff, although the commissioner is holding it in abeyance before he gives his approval on it. Blylevin is going to Pittsburgh. I've always felt that Blylevin, I know he's got one of the greatest curveballs in the history of the big leagues, but I've always felt he was overrated. I don't know what Pittsburgh is expecting from him. Last year with a good hitting team, Texas, he won 14 and lost 12. And the late Rogers Hornsby used to say, if a pitcher goes through a season and he winds up 15 and 15, he should be down south picking cotton. Anyway, Blylevin has got to show me a lot more than he's shown in the last few years and come up with a 20 or a 22-game season. I just think what Denny McLain did with just an average Detroit team a few years ago when he won over 30 games in a single season. Now that's what you call a great pitcher. And a lot of people talk about Blylevin that way, but he's never proven it. We're going to talk football today because it's football weather. And if you've been out, you know, you're sure that it is. And our guest today to talk football with is an old friend and one of the nicest people that I've ever met in the world of sports. Sid Luckman, the former great quarterback of the Chicago Bears and one of the greatest quarterbacks that the National Football League has ever seen. We'll have many things to talk about, pro football, the Bears, and other things, and he'll be with us in just about 1 minute. Say, is your bank open when you're busy and closed when you're not? Well, Northwest Federal Savings knows that a good place to save is ready for you when you're ready. So Northwest Federal's open 63 hours a week. If you work evenings, you can come to Northwest Federal 6 full days. Northwest Federal's open Monday, Thursday, and Friday evenings. And if the only time you can get to Northwest Federal is 8 o'clock in the morning, well, that's okay, too. Because Northwest Federal has early bird service every morning from 8 o'clock. You'll find 6 convenient Northwest Federal savings centers throughout Chicagoland, including our new location where this show is coming from at 72 East Randolph. Come into Northwest Federal Savings on your way to, from, or between work, shopping, or home, anytime, because Northwest Federal Savings keeps the best hours yours. Sid Luckman, our guest today, and as I said, a friend of many, many years, and really one of my favorite people, is a product of the Ivy League. You know what Ivy League is. This year, for example, Yale had a great football team. The Yale-Harvard game drew the greatest crowd they've ever had in the Ivy League. Sid, as you look back on your days at Columbia, and you're familiar with Yale and Harvard and all the rest of those schools, what about the level of football as it is played in the Ivy League?
Bob, the level of football played in the Ivy League is not the level of football that's played in the Southeast Conference, the Big Ten, or the Pacific Conference. Actually, the level there is just a little bit lower. The academic demands upon the student is extremely high, and of course, that is one of the reasons that they find it so difficult to get some of the boys into these Ivy League schools, which makes it almost impossible for them to field the kind of teams that the other teams in the football world, the college football world, have in this particular era.
And still, they all have the same scholastic demands. And there's some exciting football played in the Ivy League. This year, Yale came up with a great team.
Oh, yes, Yale's a wonderful team. In fact, just a couple of months ago, Lou Little was given a scholarship at Columbia University, and I happened to fly back to go down to see the game, and Bob, it was really pathetic. The Baker Field, where I happen to have played, the stands are just horrible. The place is deplorable. But it was certainly wonderful to see Lou Little after all these years. He's a man in his middle 80s, and he got up and made a speech between halves, and it was just very nice. But as far as the place itself and the caliber of football, it certainly wasn't anything like I had seen in any other college football around the country. Columbia Penn, it was a Columbia Penn game, and it was very, very The only thing nice about it, I can say, was nostalgic and brought back pleasant memories, Bob. But as far as the football, it just wasn't there.
You know, there's been some discussion, I'm sure you read about it in the papers, whether Northwestern, with their very strict scholastic demands, whether they should be competing in the Big Ten against schools like Ohio State and Michigan and all these other kind of schools.
Well, that's a very, very difficult question, but as far as the public in this particular area, it is just awful to go out there every Saturday and see them play and be beaten by the scores they've been beaten by. And what would be nice, Bob, is if they could possibly work out something where they could either improve upon their football or really drop out of the Big Ten. I hate to say that because we should have a Big Ten team in this area, but they do play terrible football and no reflection upon the team or the coach, but they are overmatched. And, of course, it all is in their scholastic demands.
Yes, and they're proud of it up at Northwestern. And when you talk to Northwestern alumni, they say we like it just like it is. Incidentally, John Pott, who's the athletic director at Northwestern, is going to be our guest here next Sunday at Northwest Federal, and he'll be the man to talk to about that.
Oh, he's a fine gentleman, and I'm sure that as time goes on, they're going to do something about correcting the situation, and they will come up with some better football teams, which will be very interesting.
You know, I happened to pick up a bio on you about a week ago, and I was surprised to find out that when you were at Columbia and you were a star, that you were a running back, that our dear mutual friend George Halas, one of the greatest figures in my opinion in the history of football, is a man that converted you into a quarterback.
Bob, that's a very interesting story. You know something? It's a strange thing, but just yesterday I visited with George Halas for about 2 hours, and we talked about many, many things. And every time I see George Halas, I can honestly tell you this is the most wonderful thing of my life. I just can't tell you the feeling I have for that man. Last March, I guess, we went up to watch the team practice, and it was one of the most pleasant days I've ever spent in my life. I can only tell you one thing that you have to understand. Bob, I was playing as a running back. In those days, it was only the single wing.
Uh-huh.
The only team that was using the T formation was the Chicago Bears. Actually, George, it should not really be called the T formation. It should be called the Halas formation. But he watched that game, and I guess he saw something that could possibly have made me a quarterback in the T. But he drafted me to come to the Chicago Bears. And it was one of the most pleasant experiences of my life. Bob, I'd like to say one thing. Both of us, I'm sure, feel the same way, and so does the rest of the United States, that George Halas is the man that made all of this possible. Every time I watch TV, I think that the man behind it all, who was the inspiration, who in his own life had the vision and the foresight to see this, was George Halas. George Halas was football, will always be football, and the legend and the immortality of that man will remain forever in the American public, because not only is he a great football coach, but more important, he's one of the finest human beings I have ever met in my life. I just can't say in my own, I wish there was some way in my own knowledge and terminology that I could tell the love and affection that I have and every other single player has for this fantastic human being.
Well, I certainly feel the same way about him. I admire him as much as any man I've ever met. You know, oddly enough, the story went on in the bio that George pried you away from his very close friend, Mr. Rooney, at Pittsburgh.
Well, that was what happened is the Bears were a pretty good team in those days. It was always the Bears, the Redskins, and the Giants. And he traded for Eggs Mansky and another player for Pittsburgh's first-round draft choice. And that's how George Halas was able to, he asked Art Rooney to draft me, and that's how I became a quarterback for the Bears, and that was one of the nicest experiences of my life. You can't explain the feeling that this football team had, the sentiment, the emotion, the feeling that the players had for each other. It was something that was, it really sticks in my mind as the most beautiful thing of my whole life, and of course all of it was because, you know, they always say the leader of an inspirational team or the leader is the one that makes it possible. He was our leader. He was our man. And Bob, I guess because of that, all of us have that feeling. But he did get me away from Art Rooney, and that's the way he did it. In those days, he could do many things, and he still can.
Yes.
As you know, he's still president of the National Football League, and the man, he's just as busy as he's ever been. He's feeling magnificently well. He has a little trouble with his legs, but nothing serious. And I want to say one thing. I hope that he's around for many, many years because the good Lord made him just exactly what we all want to be, a beautiful human being.
Our guest today at Northwest Federal is an old friend, Sid Luckman, one of the great quarterbacks of all time. And we'll be back with Sid in exactly 1 minute. We're delighted to be talking on our Sunday morning sports show with Sid Luckman, one of the great quarterbacks of all time and one of the nicest people around. You know, I was thinking, Sid, about things to talk about with you. You've seen the growth of pro football. You were in at the beginning, actually. One of the oddities of your career is the fact that you made the transition from a running back at Columbia under the tutelage of George Halas, and you became the first-string quarterback almost at once. Why is it that some of these quarterbacks in the pro league, it takes them 4 or 5 years, and they still haven't mastered all the intricacies of being a quarterback?
Well, actually, Bob, I'm sure that all these other boys worked as hard as I did, and I don't mean to say that in the vein of being egotistical. I don't mean I did work very, very diligently. I studied every night for hours. I stayed out after practice. I worked with Carl Brumbaugh and Luke Chancels. They helped me in every way, and then at nighttime I would study with a man named Clark Shaughnessy, and then Coach Howes would oversee it. And I think it was the fact that I just worked at it and worked at it and worked at it. It just did not come easy. And I was very, very fortunate that they dedicated themselves to wanting me to become a quarterback. And that was the reason I think I was able to pick it up. Bob, there isn't anything in the world that I know that comes easy. It takes a lot of hard work. These boys are working. But maybe it's because football today is a little bit more intricate. Maybe the defense is a little bit harder. Maybe they've improved upon it. But I've seen, look, boy like Burt Jones has come up in his first year. Some of them can do it. I think it's just a question of the person himself. And I think that's the answer more than anything, Bob.
You just brought up the subject of defense, and we know how important that is in football. Today, when a team comes out and they're looking at a 3-4 defense, and the linebackers are playing up very close, why not a little play action on the first down and throw the ball? It seems to be such an opportune time, and so few of them do it.
Well, no, the nicest and easiest thing in the world, but I'd like to answer your question by just saying, you know, it's easy to second guess. If you're a quarterback or on the radio like you've been on TV, Bob, I guess we're always being second guessed. But the point is, I'm sure that these coaches analyze the defenses. They know exactly how to contend with them or what to do against them. And the reason I think what's going to really is I would like to see him open up a little bit more. I think that Coach Halas, if he was coaching today, would make me throw on first down or do something to try to break up that kind of defense. It's a very difficult defense. But a play-action pass would seem the logical thing to do. It's hard to run against that. You got to only have certain plays, set plays that should be able to penetrate and permeate that defense. But I do think that your idea is a sound one, and you've got to throw and open up more on first down than any other time of contact against that kind of defense.
Yes. You know, the average football fan knows very little. In fact, I don't know enough about football to say that I really know what it is when you say some quarterbacks can come up to the line and they can read a defense. For example, I was reading in an article of Bob Greasy the other day that he's as good as anybody in football when it comes up to the line and reading a defense and throwing into the right spots.
That's a very, very important thing. A man should be able at all times, when he's walking up to the defense, he should immediately, as he walks up to the line of scrimmage, he looks at the defensive linebackers and he has to have peripheral vision to see where the backs are. You usually can tell from the way they line up exactly what kind of defense they'll be in because you've studied the movies for hours and hours and hours. So you should know their breakdown and how to really attack a defense. And Bob Greasy is very good at that. Stabler is very good at that. But Burt Jones, you must be able at all times to audible on the line of scrimmage. And that was one thing, and I don't mean to be bringing this up, that Coach Halas insisted upon. We would study their defenses. We'd look at movies for hours and hours. We would know when we came up to that line of scrimmage exactly what to do. We were any smarter. He taught us what to do, and by God, when we hit that line of scrimmage, we would audible on the line of scrimmage and know exactly if they're overshifted one way, try to attack their weak point and not their strong point.
Sid, you just brought up an interesting point. Let's hypothetically put you back in the Bear picture. The Bears are playing the Packers, as you know, at Soldier Field today. If you were with the team and you were looking, as the players on the Bears have all week, looking at Packer films, what guarantee is there that the Packers, looking at their films of their last game too and knowing that the Bears are looking at it, will not change things around? How can you depend on that particular film for them to do what they did last Sunday?
Well, that's a very, very intelligent question, of course. I don't like to reminisce too much, but we played the Redskins for the World's Championship, and we practiced in hopes that they would use the same defense that they used when they had beaten us previously, 7-3. So Coach Hallis had planned that, but behind everything he had ever done and we had done as a team, we always had an alternative attack. Just in case they were not in that defense, we had to be able to attack them, knowing that maybe they would be in a 4-man line or a 3-man line or a 7-man line. Now, when the Bears are going to play tomorrow against the Packers...
Today, you mean?
I mean today, I'm sorry. Presumably, they will absolutely, without any equivocation, they will know exactly what the Green Bay Packers will be doing. Now, if they get up to the line of scrimmage and see that they're not doing that, I'm sure that Jack Pardee has taught Avellini that there has to be an audible, or there has to be something to counteract anything that the Packers may do to change what they may have been doing. So there's really not, it's not that difficult if it's just done and prepared for.
Now, Avellini has certainly shown and made progress here in the time he's been with the Bears. What about the timing of his release? Would you say that he has a quick release, an average release, a slow release?
Oh, I'm very, very high on Bob. Bob Avellini is a fine football player. He's getting better with each season. As time goes on, I fear that Bob Avellini is going to do an outstanding job for the Bears. His release is such that he's got a very, very strong arm. He does get back there now much faster than he did. He's getting a little bit more agile. The thing is not so much how fast you are, it's how quick and agile you are, and that takes a lot of work. You've got to practice. You've got to be diligently out there every day for trying to improve your speed and trying to improve the release of the ball. And he is releasing the ball a lot quicker now and a lot more accurately. Some of the games he's played, he's been outstanding. The boy has tremendous potential. There's a great opportunity for him to be a sensational football player.
While you're talking about the subject of quarterbacking, I know how fond you were, and I know how fond I was, of the late Joe Staudihar, one of the nicest guys that I've ever met in my life. He had a philosophy that when a quarterback is cold on a given Sunday, you don't have to go with him all day. But you see these teams, you see it on television, they go all day. The guy couldn't hit the side of a wall with a ball, and they go all day with him and wind up losing. What about Staudihar's philosophy that play them both, play two quarterbacks, one gets hurt, the team doesn't notice any difference. They figure he also is a first-string quarterback. What about his theory?
Joe, myself, as you know, we were roommates. We were inseparable friends to the day he died. We talked constantly. We didn't live too far away from each other. He was one of the outstanding men, as Coach Hallis has always said. There are certain people in this life that you just never forget who have the charisma, the intelligence, the charm that goes with them being just a wonderful human being. We differed on that tremendously.
You did?
Oh, we differed. We used to discuss that, and of course, he was very fortunate in having two of the greatest quarterbacks of all times in Norman Van Brocklin and Bob Waterfield. There was very, very little difference between those two men. But I've always noticed, like, take an Otto Graham or a Starr or anyone or Unitas. When they were in the game, I never forget what Paul Brown once said. He said the intonation of Otto Graham's voice, the clapping of his hand, was such that the boys were inspired by him. Somehow or other, I've always felt that the team gets respect and confidence in one man. And it's when you notice when another man comes in, the team lots of times falls down. But, of course, in the Minnesota game, last week against San Francisco, they put this rookie in the fourth quarter, and he won the game for him. So maybe there's a lot of logic when a man is ice cold, as you contend, or Staudihar contend, is to put someone else in or break it up and give this fellow a chance to just sort of sit down for a couple of downs and then put him back in the game and look at things. There's a lot to what Joe had, but as far as I'm concerned, I always felt that one quarterback is the answer. But today they're getting hurt so badly,
you've got
to have more than one. In other words, you've got to be prepared for any eventuality.
One of the other great quarterbacks of your time and football players that I've talked to who have played a lot over the years say that Luckman and Baugh They were the greatest. They were two of the greatest to ever come along. What do you remember about Sammy Baugh?
Well, Sammy and myself were very dear friends. We hadn't seen each other in about 20-some years, and we both were on a TV show not so long ago. We never said a word to each other. It was the strangest thing. We both looked at each other, and we just walked over to each other and just put our arms around each other. It was almost tears in both of our eyes. I had the utmost respect and admiration for him as an athlete. And as a human being, he was absolutely one of the finest, greatest football players that ever lived. You know, he played offense, he played defense, yes. He could kick, he could run, he could do almost anything. He is an immortal today. He's a legend. He's a man who will never be forgotten. Slinging Sammy is, you know, known as one of the finest football players. But Bob, football is a strange game. As Coach Harris and myself talked about on our way up there, each era has its own greatness. You can't compare a Sayers to a Peyton or a Jimmy Brown or so on. Peyton is absolutely a sensation. Sayers was a sensation. Jimmy Brown, O.J. Simpson, these men will go down as the finest. But football, each couple of years, there's a change in football. There's a change in the way attitude. Yes. And so that is the important thing. Sammy Baugh could have played almost at any time. He had that great ability. But as far as I'm concerned, Bob, really, you cannot compare a Nagurski and a McAfee, because they in their day were the greatest. These men in their day are the greatest. So it's just, you got to take each team and each player as a person.
Sid Luckman, although your playing days are over, I know how close you are to the game and what a student you are of the game. How do you account for the fact that in the National Pro League, you see it every Saturday or every Monday night or every Sunday, you see kickers missing field goals from 15 and 16 yards out right in front of the post, and kids down in college are kicking them 60, 65 yards, and it seems like they never miss. What is it?
Well, it's something that I really can't seem to understand why this is, because that's all they do is practice kicking day after day after day. I don't know if it's the pressure that makes them miss. I don't know what's gotten in them. In the old days, I can remember George Blander and Jack Mann, as they used to come automatically. Every time they came in, you would know that it was an extra point or a field goal from the 20, 25-yard line in. These field goals are very, very imperative that you score, because as we have been taught over the years by our master, that once you're down in that zone, you must put the ball over or you must get those points. So the important thing is to have marched that far and expend all of that tremendous amount of energy that you put into it and not score is a dreadful and an emotional effect upon the team.
Yes.
And why these fellows are missing is something that I cannot understand. They're super athletes. They know what they're doing, and I can't understand how these college kids are doing it and why we're missing in the pro league like we are.
Sid, why have a couple of exciting, I think, phases of pro football seemingly dropped out of sight? Kicking, the quick kick, that's almost disappeared. Why do they always have to punt, get it high, and have the ball hang, rather than kick it out of bounds when you know it's going out on the 28 and the 30 and nobody's going to be on your 20-yard line with the ball in the next minute or so? Why is that? Why you don't see that anymore?
Bob, that's a very, very absolutely, I'm not trying to flatter you, but that is a question that people would like to know, and it's a good question, and I'm going to answer to the best of my humble ability. I cannot understand why you would allow these sensational 9-4, 9-5 men to take a chance and kick to them. I would rather see a man aim the ball anywhere from the 20-yard line in. It doesn't seem, with all that ability, like any of them, that you would think that they would be able to do that. But it seems that when they kick the ball that high, that the men should be able to get under it and be able to stop these men from running them back. But I think it takes a tremendous amount of work and time and effort for these men, and they should really at least kick it to the side, so you pin them into the side rather than straight down the field. They're all going for averages and distance rather than going for what's best for the team. And I think it's up to the coaches, and I'm sure that they will in the foreseeable future, have them kicking the ball out of bounds or off to the sidelines.
Because the punter, usually can practice all week long, and after 3 or 4 weeks of practicing kicking to the sidelines, He should be able to put it inside the 30 anyway.
You know something? I've just been thinking as you've been talking about why they're missing the field goals and why they're not kicking out of bounds. These big linemen are so fast. They're so quick. They can just get down that field, and they can rush that darn punter that the punter's so concerned about getting his kickoff or getting his place kickoff that they're concentrating so much, they're getting it so quickly, and I think that's one of the reasons they're not doing what we've been talking about.
Our guest today at Northwest Federal is Sid Luckman, one of football's all-time greats. And we'll be back with Sid in just a moment. Say, is your bank open when you're busy and closed when you're not? Well, Northwest Federal Savings knows that a good place to save is ready for you whenever you're ready. And ready to offer savers the kind of services you can get with the Northwest card. A special feature available to savers who maintain a $500 balance. Here's what you get. Traveler's checks, special occasion checks, registered checks, all with no service charge. Need document photocopies or lamination? It's free with the Northwest card. There's a special quick check cashing ID card with your picture. Even special vacations for Northwest card members. So get a world of the services you need often by getting a Northwest card. At any of six convenient Northwest Federal Savings Centers throughout Chicagoland, including the new downtown location at 72 East Randolph. That's where we're doing our show here today, and we will be for the next month and a half. Be part of a special group. And be a special person at Northwest Federal anytime, because Northwest Federal Savings keeps the best hours yours. Our guest today at Northwest Federal is an old friend of many, many years, and I hope for another 20 or 30 or 40 years. He looks great. Looks like he could go out to Soldier Field and play today. Say, by the way, what's our old mutual friend Jim Dooley doing?
Oh, strange that you would ask that, but Jim Dooley is with our company now, and I want you to know that he has really done one of the most outstanding jobs that any human being has ever done in the history of our company in selling. He's dedicated himself to this work like he did in football when he was one of the greatest strategic men on defense and offense that I've ever seen under Coach Hollis's tutelage, and he's dedicated himself, and he's doing one of the finest jobs, and I'm proud, and Coach Hollis is proud, that we have finally seen Jim really become his old self again, and we're all proud of Big Jim, because he is one of the finest guys when it gets down to it that we know.
Well, I'm really glad to hear that. I've always been very fond of him. Sid, it's been a real pleasure having you as a guest here. How do you like our new layout?
Oh, Bob, you know, I know you've been with this company a long time. It's wonderful that they have you. This is one of the finest layouts I've ever seen here, this new place on Randolph Street near Michigan. But more important, Bob, you know, we've been friends for a long, long time. And I know that the coach and myself, we talk about you. The city of Chicago has the greatest admiration and respect for one of the finest sportscasters and also one of the finest gentlemen we know. Bob, I can't thank you enough for having me. Good luck and Godspeed. Another 20 years together, Bob.
Thank you. We'll go out and freeze now at Soldier Field, but it should be a great game between the Bears and the Packers. Remember, next Sunday, our guest will be one of the outstanding figures in the Big Ten, John Punt, the athletic director at Northwestern. He'll be in that capacity now, and I'm sure he'll do a great job. In the meantime, have a pleasant day. This is Bob Elson saying goodbye until next Sunday at our usual time.